Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. Two fabulous sponsors this month, lynda.com. That's lynda.com. Did I say this month? This week, really? Anyway, lynda.com is a huge learning resource on the web. Tons of video-based training and supplementary materials. To get 7 free days, go to lynda.com/shoptalk and you'll have access to their whole catalog. And Environments for Humans promoting their Responsive Web Design Summit. That's rwdsummit.com. That's coming up really soon here, April 1st through 3rd. You can attend it from anywhere in the world. It's an online conference. Not to mention you can save bucks by using the coupon code SHOPTALKSHOW while checking out. We'll tell you more about both of those things later in the show. But for now, let's kick things off.
Shopomaniacs, you're listening to episode 107 of the Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Coyer.
Hey, everybody. How is it going? And with us today, we have Mr. Joe Casabona. How you doing, Joe?
Good, good. How you doing?
Good. So you are able to, you are a web developer and designer and work at the University of Scranton as a teacher and web developer. Is that right?
Yes, yeah. So I teach part-time, and then I spend my days doing higher ed development.
Okay, cool. For them. So when you go to whatever it is, scranton.edu, that's you?
Yeah, I've done some work on that. I'm currently working on their mobile app and a bunch of internal systems for like a portal and stuff like that.
Okay, right on. And then what do you teach? I mean, what
is
it like? Hold on,
your university is building a portal? like a Stargate?
Yes. So we can easily get to like other universities.
And I'm part of it. Or is it a portal through time?
Now that I wish we could do, because I'm like a big Doctor Who fan, so that would be very cool. But and then
so it's a dual life, though, is the point.
You
both teach and do it, which is kind of, I don't know, I think that's interesting, because you know, there's classic jokes about it, those who can't do teach and whatever, and like how do you stay up to date when you're doing one or the other and stuff. But you can kind of do both, get the best of both worlds. I do it for real in the real world and then teach people about it. Do you have some inherent advantage? Does it make you a better teacher in a way?
According to my professor and what students have told me, I am a good teacher. And that's what I try for. I mean, I don't know if, I'm not going to say I'm better than anybody, but students have told me I am. Is that weird and braggy?
Yeah, you have the data to prove it.
Yeah. So,
I think that's so key, is that you're doing stuff while talking about it, right? It makes you knowledgeable. I think that's like one of the big things I feel like about Shop Talk and stuff like that. If I ever quit making websites, I should probably just whatever give this job to like Jen Schiffer or somebody like that.
Does work?
No, who actually does work?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, my biggest fear, I guess, as a teacher, is that I get my skills get stagnant, or you know, I just kind of like use the same curriculum like every year, and then with the web, at least it gets really outdated really fast. So I don't want to be in that position.
Yeah, I know Sam Capila. She's a host of some podcasts, but she works at Texas State down here in Texas. And we've talked about her on the show before. But she frequently, like I think, like you know, a few times a year, they revisit the curriculum, like the course syllabus and everything, and like they just. They like kind of have to revamp what they teach every 6 months or something like that. Are you finding yourself in a situation like that? Do you just every course you kind of just say like, well, what's fresh, what's new?
Or yeah. So I'm not necessarily, you know, that's not a department wide rule, but I find myself doing that a lot. And like one class I teach isn't even web development related. It's almost like intro to computers. It's called computer literacy, okay. And I find like. I'll teach them the stuff that we've been teaching them for a while, like the important stuff, but I try to bring like current events into it. So like I've been talking a lot about wearable technology and net neutrality and the NSA and all that stuff. So
nice.
That's pretty cool.
I should take a class like that.
It's a lot of fun. I like to like randomly poll my students too and be like, what do you guys think of this? And is this how you use websites and stuff like that? So I can get like a good idea of how 18, 19 year olds are using the web and technology.
Right.
See, that fascinates me is how the iPad generation understands computers. I heard somebody recently say, was it on our live show, Chris? But it was somebody who was saying like they don't understand the file system. Yeah, it was Nick.
Yeah.
He was saying like at Treehouse, people are like, I don't know where I save files. Do you get that experience?
I get a lot of like, I don't, like they don't really necessarily know what like a zip archive is and stuff like that. I'm seeing a lot more like moving in that, like people, like students have never used AIM, which is crazy to me because like when I was a kid, that's what we used. And now they're just like, yeah. Well, we use Facebook and like how we find stuff on Facebook, like a lot of that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting.
My mom was teaching my uncle how to use the computer. He like brought his laptop over and was like, I don't understand what's happening here. And the root of the problem was that he just did not grasp the concept of a click versus a double click, that those are kind of different actions that do different things. It's kind of a fundamental thing, but I guess if you just never figured that out or something, maybe it's not all that discoverable. I don't know. It's something we don't even think about really, but
your like uncle didn't spend like 12 hours, like one night in his room when he was 14 trying to visit naughty websites. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I guess not.
Oh man.
And then this double click is weird on the web too. It's weird that like, you know, this, that it almost never exists on the web, but it exists all the time in the operating system. So that's kind of a weird disconnect too.
Yeah. Yeah. I was teaching my mom when I was in high school and I'm like, so just go there and right click. And she goes, what's right click? I'm like, just right click. I got like really mad at her cause I was a teenager. I'm like, I was like, wah.
Right click.
And like, she didn't realize that there were two buttons on the mouse. And I'm like, the right one. And probably could have handled that better looking back. Like, yeah. 15 years ago.
But. In retrospect. Sure. So another one of these things that has permeated your at least somewhat recent career is books and writing about stuff, specifically WordPress, because both of them, there's you have an older book called Building WordPress Themes from Scratch and a brand new book. I don't know. It must have just come out in the last couple months, right? Or
if
even more recent, Responsive Web Design with WordPress. It has a very valuable five-letter domain too, rwdwp.com. Nice score.
Thank you.
Did you pay $1 million for that? Jeez.
No, I was like, I was really surprised that it was available and got like weirdly excited about it. Like my friends are like, why are you so excited about this domain? And I'm like, do you understand that they didn't understand, but that's okay.
Five letters for $15, guys. Yeah. Come on.
$3 a letter.
And just the ones you want. I mean, RWD-WP would have been pretty good.
Right. Yeah. So I was really excited about that.
Cool. So what is it about? Tell us the whole story of the book.
So responsive design with WordPress. Well, you know, as you can tell from my book titles, I'm very creative. They're just exactly what they're about. I talk about, so I had this idea last year, you know, that a lot of people were doing responsive design and a lot of people were working with WordPress. I think it's over 20% of the web is now powered by WordPress or something like that. And so I was like, there's not a book that combines these two topics. So in the book, I cover, you know, responsive design principles, you know, EM-based breakpoints and content-based breakpoints and, you know, checking for performance as well as like just making it look nice. And then I go through a little bit of theme development and things that you can do inherently in WordPress that will make your websites, your WordPress sites better. You know, so my big example is when you upload an image with WordPress, it creates, you know, at least four copies, and you can nicely integrate that with picture fill. So
I was hoping we were going to go there, because here's the idea, right? That WordPress doesn't care if your site is responsive or not, right? And responsive design doesn't really care if your words, if you use WordPress or any other framework. These are two concepts that like are separate in that, whatever, they're just different worlds, you know, and they can work together, they can not work together, whatever, they're whatever. So but your book does focus on those connections of like, how can one help the other, you know, what are particular challenges with one that can be solved by the other. And that's probably a great example, right? So responsive design, one of the concepts of responsive design is dealing with responsive images in some way. Ideally, you have multiple copies of that image, and you can use some kind of technique to serve the correct one. And WordPress just so happens, right out of the box, to have the ability to, when you upload one, it can make smaller versions of it for you. Wow, how nice is that? Takes, you know, that's the beauty of computers and using something like a CMS, is to make these what would be sucky, hard, repetitive tasks easier for you. So whatever. I mean, maybe you could elaborate on that. How does that go down in the real world WordPress?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. Like, and that's still a really tough problem. Like, that's what I noticed. Like, I didn't think that part would be easy, but it was the biggest challenge writing the book, I think, because, you know, what I cover is using a hook in WordPress to replace like their featured, if you choose a featured post or a featured post image, replace the HTML they spit out with picture fill and the different sizes, and like programmatically figuring out the breakpoints based on the image sizes and stuff like that. But if you try to do that on like a wide scale, like say you have a bunch of images in your post, it could get really, WordPress can get really unstable. Cause I mean, like the way to do it is see what images are out on the server and then bring them in. So, you know, like what I put forth is just kind of, this is the way that I think it's like a good solution now, but it'll probably change. And 3.9 is coming out with like HTML5 supported, or like better HTML picture galleries and stuff like that. So
I've done that before. So for example, if you're using WordPress right now, and you're just writing a blog post and you're going to upload an image to it, there's a button somewhere in the editor there where you click it and it brings up that like nearly full page media world, whatever they call it. And you can
media world.
Yes. And I use this like 10-20 times a day probably in all of my different stuff, and it has drag and drop. Now you can just drag an image on there and it'll upload it, and there's kind of hooks in there too, and there's programmatic ways that you can tell WordPress to what you want to happen after that happens. Make a thumbnail, make other versions of it or whatever. And then you could, when you pick one and then set insert into post, it can barf that stuff out. And generally it barfs it out in just like an image tag or whatever. I think what Joe's saying is in the 3.9, I guess, maybe. I haven't actually seen this work yet, but it'll spit it out in like a figure and fig caption tag. I have stuff on my blog where I have hooks in there that are already doing that, because I feel like that's the semantically correct thing to do and whatever. It's weird for WordPress because they can't guarantee that the site that a WordPress is installed on and the theme, I guess, will be HTML5, right? Mm-hmm. But it's about time, probably.
Yeah. Mm. And like the biggest thing that I didn't even realize was like their galleries. Like if you create a photo gallery in WordPress, and I think this is changing too, I hope, is it prints it out as like a definition list. And that was really weird and like complicated. So like I cover in the book, like how to completely rip this apart and change it, like make it more friendly. Yeah.
Man, if I was in charge, which I'm absolutely not, I would just rip that feature out. Image galleries, really? How often do you see that?
Everyone likes it, though.
Why can't you pluginize that, though?
It should be a plugin. I agree.
Way back in the day, they were talking about doing core plugins. Like, these are automatic plugins that are like, we know people have a desire for this, but they don't really belong in core. Maybe it belongs in Jetpack.
Maybe that's Jetpack.
Well, I think it kind of is, yeah.
I think Jetpack is getting into the gallery stuff, so. Maybe they won't. It's been a while since I've visited Jetpack. I just Googled jetpack and I got an ad for an actual jetpack.
Nice.
It's only $600, Chris.
Oh my God. Is it one of those water ones or does it shoot fire? Because I'm more interested.
I think it's
in
a
fire.
Water one. Mm. It's a water.
Water
one.
Ones are cool, but where's, you know, I want ones that can possibly kill myself with.
This is an underwater one. All right.
I'm still
shop talk. Shop talk bucks for jetpacks. That's what's happening here. Okay. I think I've enjoyed the updates to jetpack. It seems like they're putting everything.
Yeah, I saw a screenshot the other day. You know, have you ever seen it and installed it? There's like that grid of
products, basically.
Yeah, that you have to like activate and deactivate and stuff. There, I feel like that's long been a little janky. And I saw a screenshot of how they're gonna like switch that up. It's gonna be a lot more obvious, like what's active and what's not in the world of jetpack. The reason I use it is for they have a subscribe to this blog and subscribe to future comments thing that has long been like, there's nobody has ever really nailed that in a plugin. There used to be this like subscribe to comments, you know, like I want to be emailed if there is a follow-up comment to the, there's a really old, really janky one that I used to use for a while. And I was very happy to remove that because Jetpack handles that now, which is nice. And now they have Markdown in Jetpack, so I was able to remove my old Markdown plugin and get that going in there. I just feels nicer to use something that Jetpack is in there because it's backed by automatic and it's going to be around for the long haul, you know, just feel. Mm-hmm. Anyway, sorry to hijack that stuff. What else is going on? What else is in the book, Responsive Web Design with WordPress?
Well, the last chapter is like 7 tutorials or maybe 6 tutorials that I wrote about like how to do specific things. But aside from that, the rest of the book is if you go out to like millenniumflights.com, I think is what it is. It's probably pretty like janky right now because I was fixing it. But, you know, we kind of like take this concept of like we build out that concept in the book. Like, so we work on this one theme and it's available on GitHub. So doing things like creating like a cool way to do like tags on mobile phones instead of this tag cloud that has like tiny text and some big text. So, you know, just like a bunch of things like that, proper archiving, things to think about, comments, you know, just some of the.
That's awesome, though, because WordPress has a function to output a tag cloud, right? So if you need to make that work on small screen, I like the idea that they're kind of WordPress specific features that.
Right. Yeah.
Tackled in a responsive way.
Yeah. Right. And because, you know, like, I guess you could say like any site has like navigation. I do talk about navigation and how to like swap out using like the custom nav walker that you can use. And like I cover REST in it too. But you know, the comments and like these intense archive pages and stuff like that are specific, not necessarily to WordPress, but blogs in general. But I talk specifically about WordPress.
Yeah. So what's the target audience, I guess? Is it like people who have maybe like flirted with Bones and never like coded their own theme, or who's kind of your target person?
So I kind of make the assumption that that readers have developed or at least poked around with their own theme or a theme, maybe a child theme. I assume that they definitely know HTML, CSS, and PHP. So I do cover a little bit of, hey, here's like a quick intro on how to develop themes and some of the terminology I'll be using. But for the most part, you know, I think the more familiar you are with themes, the better it probably is. So, which I cover in my first book, shameless plug.
So. Nice.
I got a sound effect for that one.
All right.
So the book again is rwdwp.com. We have a whole bunch of questions, so we could get into that. Let's do one. How about that? Or do you have any drama or anything you need to mention?
I think we're light on drama. Unless I forgot something, which is totally possible because drama only lasts one day on the internet. But news and links. I wanted to just a shout out to you guys, the listeners. I recently noticed I was clicking through my own website and I realized there's a bunch of comments now, like comments that kind of got kind of stale, but now episode 105 in particular, Rapid Fire 24, you guys commented a bunch. I was gonna say butt ton, but then I was like, got worried about the flag. You guys commented quite a bit, so thank you very much. I'll try to reply. I was like, I didn't know this was happening. I should probably get an alert or something. Anyway, but yeah, cool. So thanks for your comments. And then Chris, you had a cool blog post about SVG. I don't know if you wanted to mention it real quick.
Oh, well, maybe I should, just because I think it was in the Louis episode where I was like, I got an idea for a something. And it was it was a grunt, because I'm behind the scenes, I'm working on CSS Tricks like version 11 or whatever, and I'm getting really close to getting it out. And I wanted to get rid of icon fonts just because they've been a little bit of a pain in the butt for me and whatever. I like the idea of SVG. I'm also working on a new talk for this year all about SVG. And I was like, God, I'm using SVG for everything. And the idea, my little rant was, maybe even remember it, was that you should be able to take like a folder full of SVGs and run a grunt task that will take them and smush them all into one SVG. Then you'll either link to that SVG or you'll just insert it on the page as inline SVG that's kind of hidden, right? They're all in defs tags, to it's hidden, but you also should also kick it off the page or whatever. And then there's this tag in SVG called use, and use allows you to reference an ID of an otherwise something that has that same ID specified elsewhere, probably a group tag, because SVGs are made up of a bunch of paths and rectangles and circles and stuff. You can wrap all those in one G tag. Imagine like the code pen icon as the little code pen, little 3D box, but with a circle around it too often. That would be two paths, and then a G tag would be wrapped around them both with an ID that's like ID code pen. Later in the document, you can just say use, and then this special X-link attribute, and then just say hashtag CodePen, and it will output that icon there. So you can reuse them all these different places you want, target it with a class name, and change the fill color and stroke and all this type of stuff. It's like SVG spriting, essentially. It's really kind of this efficient system without any of the, I don't know, struggles and difficult workflow that go around icon fonts. Not that they're that hard, but this is even easier, especially if there's a grunt task. Fabrice Weinberg made a grunt plugin that kind of does it. It's pretty new, working out some issues with and stuff, but it works pretty good for me. I'm literally using it on this redesign of CSS Tricks, and this blog post is all about how you can do it too. And the browser support isn't as deep as icon fonts, but like other than that, head to head, I think it beats just about every other thing that you can compare to icon fonts. So I think it's kind of possibly maybe the future of dealing with icon systems on websites, and we'll put a link to that in there.
That's cool. I'm excited to use it. I think we got a complaint that icon fonts don't work on Shop Talk Show right now on some weird Android.
Weird, right? No, it was a Windows phone.
Okay, Windows.
And it was like, who knows? Was it a network failure for that font? Was it a problem with that particular operating system or that browser on that operating system? Or did our CDN temporarily fail? What, all this stuff. Pretty much none of those things can happen with an inline SVG. You know?
Nice.
They either work or they don't.
Yes or no? Binary. All right. Well, let's get into the meat and potatoes of the Shop Talk Show. First, we got a question from Frank Apicella. I'm riffing on the name there. Here, I'm starting to take my site's performance more seriously, and I'm having great success compressing and caching everything, except when it comes to defer parsing for JavaScript for both internal and external resources. I've been reading up on it, but since I don't know JavaScript that well, I'm having a hard time implementing. Currently, I enqueue the scripts in the footer, WordPress, but apparently that's not enough.
I thought this was interesting to focus on for the WordPress angle for one thing. You know, when you use, what is the WordPress thing for it? It's literally
WP enqueue scripts.
Yes. Right. And what does it do if you just pass it one parameter and you just give it like the URL of the script or whatever? Is that, does it go on WP head by default?
Right. Yeah.
But then Frank is saying, There's some way to make it go into WP foot also, which I guess I didn't even know that, or maybe I did.
There's like a fifth parameter, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The fifth parameter in footer, $in footer, defaults to false. So if you set that to true, you will output it in the footer.
That's cool.
But that's not enough.
Well, Frank is saying that's not enough for deferred loading. But it, first of all, you be careful with that because, I don't know, if half your stuff uses it and half doesn't or whatever, you'd probably want to use it in everything. And yes, it's a good idea to load your scripts in the footer. It just is. That is deferred loading, isn't it? Or is that deferred loading but not deferred parsing?
Well, so that should be deferred loading. Like, oh yeah, I mean it. I think it's just the idea that like your JavaScript should never block parsing. Like it should never appear in the head that will block, because while it parses, it blocks that. So like you say, hey, do this on your own time, whether that's async or at the bottom of the page.
So if you're concatenating all your scripts and you're loading them in the footer, what else is there to do?
I don't know. Orders, maybe. Joe, have you experienced this with WordPress? Are there any gotchas?
I mean, not that I can think of. I'm not like a really great at JavaScript, but you know, you want to make sure that you know you have your dependencies set up and things like that. You know, you want to make sure that other plugins aren't loading the same JavaScript and things like that, which is what WP and QScript does. But I can't think of anything.
Right. Besides, so you might have two plugins that both need jQuery to do their thing. They both call WP and QScript. WordPress will keep track of that and only output one because it knows to do that. It would be irresponsible for a plugin to not use WP script and use some other way to go get jQuery, because then you're in that position, like Joe said, you're loading up multiple dependencies for no reason and it might have some pretty serious consequences other than performance. It might not work.
Mm-hmm. I would make sure that these things are in the footer and they're compressing, but that I think the big problem is execution order. And then usually with WordPress, it has that if you have a jQuery plugin that just uses the dollar sign or whatever, or you are just writing with dollar signs in WordPress, that usually explodes in WordPress. So so always use the word jQuery. That's a tip I've learned.
Oh, you
open source.
Yeah, you like to default to whatever one ships with.
Yeah, well, that's because jQuery is very like, or well, WordPress has that no conflict mode or whatever because it used to ship with like prototype and all that. And so, yeah, I recommend using the word jQuery. But yeah,
that was obnoxious.
Topcat is mentioning rightly that if you pass it in as a closure, like function dollar sign, and then close that with a jQuery.
So it passes the jQuery object up to that function, and then it's
as the dollar sign,
right? So it doesn't matter. Within that scope, you can use dollar sign safely, which is the only way to write jQuery. I absolutely hate looking at jQuery written where it says the word jQuery 900 times in the plugin. Yeah, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes though you got to be safe in WordPress. It's a little tricky. But yeah, I mean that should start giving you 100% if you should be passing.
Yeah, I'm curious why it's not passing.
Yeah. Get back to us. Let us know if that helps though using the in footer flag, but hopefully that'll work. Yeah, and make sure they're concatted into the least number of files possible. Next question.
Let's do a sponsor. Can I do one real quick? Oh, I'd like to do the lynda.com one. That's lynda.com. And I told you at the beginning of the show, they're this huge learning resource. Chances are you've heard of them because I feel like they're probably like the most well-known, largest organization as far as like, I need to learn how to do X. Where can I learn how to do it? If it has anything to do with computers or creativity or technology, it's probably on lynda.com. So lynda.com/shoptalk is what you use to get a 7-day free trial. I have a course on there. It'd probably pair pretty well with Joe's first book, WordPress Themes from Scratch, wpthemesfromscratch.com. But I have a course on there too. It's about building a theme from scratch. Essentially, we actually start with a blank Photoshop file and Photoshop it first, then move it to HTML, CSS, and ultimately move it into WordPress. And it's a pretty long course, but it's comprehensive on it. I mean, it's a couple years old now, so it's not like WordPress 3.8.1 or whatever. whatever. But it's not even, that's not even that important. It's more about the fundamentals of thinking about a theme and thinking about how CMSs work and which bits are dynamic and which aren't and how do we manage things in a smart way. The spirit of it is still very much there. Anyway, that course is on lynda.com, but there's so much other stuff. And like I've said in the past, it's not just this stuff. It's not just WordPress and Drupal and jQuery and stuff. All that stuff is there. If we talk about it in this show, there's probably a course on it at lynda.com, but there's also like all kinds of other stuff that you wouldn't think of. I like to list some, look at the very brand newest courses. There's a course on Google Analytics tips. There's one on shooting with Blackmagic cameras, which looked interesting to me. These are like 4K cameras that are like literally for like movie production work. Revit construction modeling tools. Like, do you want to learn how to be an architect? There's that type of stuff in there. Anyway, lynda.com/shop talk. Let's do another question. What do you got?
Mark Phoenix calls in.
Hi, chaps. I have a responsive site that I built in HTML and CSS, and I'm in the process of adding a blog area to it with WordPress, but I'm just tacking it onto the existing site at the moment. I guess I really should move the whole site over to WordPress, if only to level up my skills, because I do want to develop all my sites in WordPress in the future. It's maybe a vague question, but what is the best way to accomplish this, to make the transition from building static sites to building WordPress sites? Thank you. Thanks for the show. You guys are my web senseis. Cheers.
Well, thanks, Mark, for calling in.
Mark has a static site, and he wants to, like, make slash blog be the blog, but what do you think, Joe?
So I would say, yeah, the best way to do it is just move everything into WordPress. Usually what I'll do is I'll take the HTML, I'll plug in the header part in the header, the footer part in the footer, and then create, like, the page template, page.php, index.php. And then I'll usually do, like, a separate like page-home.php, that's the homepage template. And if you want to have your main site and then like the blog like secondary, so you don't want your main posts to show up or your posts to show up on the main page, there's a setting in WordPress where you can go to in the admin, WP admin, you go to settings, reading, and then instead of display the latest post, you can choose display a static page.
And right, because chances are, like, your home, your design right now, because it doesn't have a blog, it probably is like a static page, right? It probably just has some stuff on it. I don't know, right, whatever. Right. Somebody with a headset on and something about how SEO awesome you are. Anyway. So what you're saying is you can make that page and then make that your home page from a setting in WordPress.
Right, right. And then what I'll usually do is I'll create like a blank page with no content on it called blog.
Yeah, I do that too.
In the WP admin and say, display my latest posts out there.
Yep.
So you're advocating that he doesn't like install WordPress at a subdirectory and just run it there and try to match the look of it, but just go whole hog here. Just make the site WordPress. It's not particularly difficult to move a couple of static pages into a page template. And then you just, won't it just feel a little better? You'll have a little bit more control. You won't be like fighting, changing a design in one place and then having to go edit it some other place too and yada yada.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, I was doing that for a while. Like, Casabona.org was a static page because I never updated it. And then I had Casabona.org/blog. And that was awful just to manage. So I just one day just.
You've lived this.
Yeah, it was terrible. I tried to do it like quick and dirty, and like it ended up costing me more time anyway, like in the long run. So.
Yeah. If you're going to use a CMS, use a CMS.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's like you go from managing, like, let's say five pages in your website to kind of managing two templates that you're kind of tweaking. It gets a little faster, you know, if you, like, add a div, you know.
Right. And there's still only one style sheet probably in a situation like
that. And I think it's important to remember, like you have a, like, PHP, which is what WordPress runs on, it and Ruby and all these languages, their job is to output HTML. So you can, like, just rename an HTML file .php, basically. But then to get it into WordPress, you have to start using these special WordPress functions, which I'm sure one of Joe's books will tell you all about. So from scratch, yep. Right? The WP from scratch. So it's the easiest jump in my experience was just to like get into WordPress theming because you're just like, wait a minute. Like now I just have to do this and it does that. That's awesome. Including files is like a drug. It's wonderful. So I think you can do it, Mark. That's what I'm saying. Right? The first time you included a file, wasn't it magical? You were just like, I could do anything.
Yep. Yeah, it was life-changing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I recommend it. All right. Next question. Oh, man, we got another audio. This is the best in the world for me, the radio guy. All right, here we go. Seth Kimball calls in. Are you ready? Here we go.
Hi, guys. This is Seth Kimball from the Detroit area. When I design websites for clients, I almost always work with WordPress, and one reason is that it's so widely used. So for some reason, I'm out of the picture when the client needs help in the future. I know they're going to be able to find a developer that works with WordPress and can help them out. Can you recommend any CMSs that are worth checking out and that specifically have that similar widespread use and staying power? Thanks a lot. I love the show.
All right, so Seth wants to date another CMS on the side. Welcome to Loveline. What would you guys recommend?
That's pretty weird because I mean I think we all are in agreement that I know we like overemphasize WordPress on the site probably or not. We emphasize it because we use it. So like I don't know. I'd prefer to talk about something I have some experience with, but not use. But I think anybody could agree, no matter what CMS they use, WordPress is number one, right? I mean, it, like Joe said at the beginning of the show, it powers 20% of the internet, right? I mean, I don't know that you're going to find another CMS that also powers another different 20% of the internet.
Some like, you know, like some enterprise level CMS. Like, I don't even know. What's the one like XCOM or something?
Oh yeah, gosh, there's like Expression know. Engine. And then like the university uses Cascade. Like, I guess, but in there, like Cascade, that's like by Hannon Hill and their support's really good. Like their knowledge base is really good and stuff like that, but as far as like widespread community, I would say that WordPress is your best bet.
I think it's WordPress, Drupal, and Expression Engine.
Right.
And Joomla's in there somewhere, but I'm not sure if that's grown or gotten smaller over the years or what. I would suspect Drupal's probably number two, right?
Yeah, yeah,
last
I think
time
so.
I checked, that was the case.
So if your only criteria is what's the second most popular one, it would be Drupal.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, the people who disagreed with me recently about Drupal, they're saying Drupal 8 is gonna get really good, and I think they're kind of getting the admin interface to be a little more easier and everything, which has kind of been my like big hang up about Drupal. So that'll get easier, and that's easier to hand off to clients, you know. So something to look out for. So might be singing a different tune about Drupal soon.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, I don't know. Every time I look back like a year ago, the tools and stuff that I'm using for the web is totally different. And then you look a year before that, and I mean, I feel like a year represents a significant amount of time and like what we use as like major components of our job. So things are going to change. It's just the way it is.
But I don't feel shame or worry, Seth, about WordPress, man. I mean, again, 20% of the internet.
That's one of those things that hasn't changed in my entire... I mean, it gets better, but it's been a rock.
And yeah. And I've said it before. I've done like the custom CMS route and stuff like that, which is fine, but only I can like maintain that. And that's not good should I like... whatever, die in a bus crash or something terrible. So anyway, that's something to think about, all, you know, like from a responsibility standpoint is like, who can maintain this after I get rich and famous and quit? So
it's a good topic to write a book about too.
Do you think I should write that book? A book apart book called What Happens When I Get Rich and Famous. I'll just email Jeff. I call him Jeff. I'll just email Jeff about it.
Everybody go to rwdsummit.com. That's Environments for Humans. most recently up, you know, the thing, the next online conference that they're having. It's this April 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, 3 days, all day long. First day, all about performance. Second day, all about technical stuff. Third day, all about strategy. I think it's kind of, you know, those are kind of just like a loose way to group it together. Also, look it up and down through the names and who is a good, you know, who are you interested in saying? What is their topic about? You can buy tickets for any combination of days, all of them, one day, whatever you want to do. You're going to love it. The coupon code SHOPTALKSHOW is worth how much? I got to look it up. I know I didn't say it at the beginning of the show.
It's significant.
Yeah, that's good. It's like 20% or something. It literally is 20%. So a fifth of what you would pay. Gone off the top of it by using coupon code SHOPTALKSHOW. Go to rwdsummit.com. Don't be surprised if it redirects you. That's just how they roll. It takes you to environmentsforhumans.com and the homepage for the Responsive Web Design Summit. Dave's going to be speaking at it. So, you know, get a little more Dave if you want to. You know, all the best stuff. I know you like Dave on this show, but you'll love him in something that he's getting paid to do.
You're really love him. Yeah. When he's talking about gulp.
Are you going to gulp it out? Oh, that would be it.
I might gulp it out, nice, man. Nice.
All right, let's do another question.
All right, we have another audio question. Oh, wait. Yeah, we do have another audio question. Let's see if I can find it and get the right one. So I don't want to lead you guys astray again. Here we go. It's from Sheila.
Hey, guys. Huge fan of the show. I've been thinking about getting into freelancing more seriously, and I'm wondering what you would say the most important skill sets are, having only worked at large companies where the tech stack is basically provided for you. I'm wondering if the best path will be to become very comfortable with WordPress, customizing themes and creating my own themes, and the same with Shopify, or if there's some other route I should go. Thanks. Bye.
So it sounds like Sheila's going to pick up some freelance work, but, you know, her kind of tech stack is predicted by her job. So, you know, WordPress, Shopify, some other path would be good. Thoughts?
Well, in my experience, because I kind of freelance on the side, and I was full-time before I started working at the university, I just decided I was going to get really good at something, and that something was WordPress. I was using it already a bunch, so... you know, I decided to kind of focus on WordPress theme and plugin development.
And then, like, when you put your name out there as a freelancer, do you say, I am a WordPress freelancer? Or do you just say, "What well, I'll do whatever, and then if somebody contacts you and they say, hey, I need a Drupal theme, do you just go, no, sorry, my freelance time is dedicated to WordPress? Or how does that, like, go down?
Yeah, so I'll say that I'm a web and WordPress developer. So, you know, if they need just, like, general web development work done or something, I can do that. But if they do want to use something I'm not familiar with, like Drupal or something else, you know, I'll say that's not really my specialty. I'll see if I can talk to some other freelancers I know and send you their way. And then, you know, those freelancers will send, like, WordPress work to me as well.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So do you think that's, I mean, that way worked for you, but I'm sure there's freelancers out there that just be like, if you ask me for work, I will do it. You know, I don't care what the CMS is. Do you think that's a short-sighted strategy and that you prefer the specialization? Or?
Yeah. At least, when I first started, I was kind of like that. And I was like, you know, just get all the clients I possibly can. But, you know, I think that was taking up a lot more time because then I'd have to go and learn some new platform just to, and like, you know, I didn't really like charging for like the learning curve at that point, at least. So I'd have to like invest time into learning this thing and then do this project and then maybe not even revisit it again if people were using something else later. So, you know, at least for me, that didn't really work out that well. Like the basic web technologies like HTML, CSS, JavaScript. I just learned SAS. It's the best thing ever. You know, those are like, you know, those are good to know. But if you're going to focus on some sort of development, I would say, you know, specialize and get really good at one thing.
Yeah. Okay. So that would be advice for you, Sheila. I think you know, part of your question was kind of leading you down that path. It sounds like is to focus on one of those things, and the learning curve will be shorter. So that's nice. And this isn't your very first learning curve either. You know, you're already working at a company where you're familiar with this other whole tech stack. So this will be at least your second road down this. So it should be a little bit easier there. I tend to like that route. I tend to, if I'm looking for someone to do work for me, I tend to like the ones where they literally just come out and say what they're best at. I tend to go with one of those persons rather than a complete generalist. So as a buyer of an occasional help, I kind of dig that. And like this relates to the last question, and that WordPress is so big, too, it's a good target. If you're going to pick a new one, why not pick a huge target, you know?
Yeah. I think most jobs I've seen, like for pickup work, it's like, I need a WordPress developer, which it sounds like that's how you'd probably want to start out, you know, picking up little night jobs or something. It's like, do you know somebody who does WordPress or like, you know, or somebody's like small business people are always looking for little websites and WordPress is perfect for that. You know, or Squarespace or something like that, you know, but like you could learn to how to do a job, you know, do that. Shopify really isn't that much different. You know, it's a little bit different than WordPress and stuff like that. So you could take your WordPress skills and move them over to Shopify, I think. You know, I have a friend, Zach, who does Drupal development in like front end sort of stuff for Drupal. And like he has people banging down his door for like help. So there you go. Something to think about. So there's a lot of work out
there. Sounds good. Good luck, Sheila. Right. Let's do another one.
All right. We got I call them analog questions. Here from Jan Druniak writes in, a development strategy is pretty much required for something like Ruby on Rails.
Deployment is just spelled, was probably my fault.
Oh, sorry. Nope. I messed it up. I read wrong. A deployment strategy is pretty much required for Ruby on Rails where you're pre-compiling and restarting servers. But what about WordPress? I'm curious how deployment is done on the big shot superstar sites like, oh, I don't know, CSS-tricks.com. Do you just FTP into the theme folder? Hey, what about plugins? Those save their settings in the database. So do you overwrite the database on production when you add a plugin locally and all that? Or do you just install the plugins on production manually? What about version control? Does that play a part in your deployment cocktail?
Fabulous
Inquiring
questions.
Minds must know.
First of all, Joe, do you have a deployment strategy for WordPress? Do you generally version control everything or not really?
Yeah, I've gotten really big on like Git lately, so I've been a lot better about that because I was just using like, I hope nobody like kills me, like just Coda and like FTP through Coda, but like not really keeping good local copies, but. Now I do everything with like MAMP.
Oh my.
now I'm using MAMP and I've been looking at VVV, right? Like very vagrant or something like that. That somebody just told me about recently for like easy WordPress local deployment. And then, so that's kind of my. Still
varying
working.
Vagrant vagrants.
Something
that's
like
pretty
that.
Wild. I have not heard of that. It looks like it's. Very somewhat popular here on the thing. So yeah, okay.
Okay.
I'll have to look into that.
Cool. So then how do you deploy then? What's kind of your get it into the cloud strategy?
Yeah, I'll use FTP for that usually, or SFTP, I guess, to be proper.
Okay, but is it? I mean, just curious. We're not trying to drill you on this, but
right,
I feel like this a lot.
And
of...
What's your password? and then
it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
I have the same one.
A lot of people are in this state. You know, they've been using FTP forever. I did too. It's because Coda was such good software and made it so damn easy, and it really wasn't that big of a deal. You know, but there is like, you know, it's a little bit more for the lone soldier. You know, if you're working on 2-3 people on the same WordPress site, the Coda thing becomes not really possible. You know, you're over, especially if you're the same type of worker where you're all in and out of you know, the same type of files. You know, like if you know, one person changes it, the other person has it open coded and they save it too, all that work is just gone. That's a little ridiculous. And then, you know, get getting into SaaS and stuff like that, it's a lot easier to work locally. Well, not to mention it's a lot faster. You can work offline. There's just a zillion reasons for working locally. And then working with a team really knocks it out of the park. But then there's this awkward moment, which is, okay, I get it. Let's get it on Git. I have a local thing I'm working on. But then how do I get it to my website? So people are like, oh, great. So it doubles the complexity of my workflow. Now I have to do all this Git stuff and work locally. But then when I need to deploy, I have to still open an FTP editor and just kind of drag everything over there. So it still has that kind of human error possibility of that. And that's what deployment is that Jan is asking about. How do you, is there some kind of way we can automate that? Can my server just pull from the Git repository too? That's kind of, or whatever. That's just one of the ways that it can go down. Anyway, what do you think, Dave? Do you have anything to say about?
Well, so, I'll talk about what we do here at Shop Talk because I think it's a pretty good example with WordPress. We develop locally, two developers, Chris and myself, occasionally, once a year, we'll each make a change. so that involves pulling down from the Git repo, which we have on Beanstalk, but just let's pretend it's on GitHub.
It'd be on GitHub, you know.
So we have it on Beanstalk. So we say, okay, get all the files. I'm working on this. And then we change files. We set up a local WordPress, you know, and maybe we're just handing off the theme, but I think we're handing off the whole entire WordPress.
Yeah, our repository. And this is an interesting thing to talk about in WordPress land. Like, what do you make the root of the repo? And it really depends on what you're working on. But I think for me and Dave, I think it works pretty well. And in general, I just repo the whole dang thing right from the root.
Mm-hmm. So we have like all of WordPress in a Git folder. So, and if WordPress is updated, we'll update it and then we'll send it up. Mm-hmm.
Our Beanstalk such that as soon as you commit it back to Beanstalk, it just Beanstalk FTPs it right to the server.
Yeah. So in Beanstalk's a robot. It's not some guy we pay to do it manually. So I trust the robot to do it because he'll look at, these files have changed. I will send these files.
It's still a little dangerous. But Dave, because I think a more standard setup is that Beanstalk auto pushes it to a staging server. And then once you're happy with that, you can send a commit up through Git with like a special keyword in it or something. And Beanstalk will see that and then move that to production, and it can handle all that really, really easily. So that's like if you're going to be on Git anyway, having some deployment strategy like that is very nice. And GitHub doesn't really help you with deployment. They're just not in the deployment world.
Yeah. And pretty like factual. If one of us made a like super intense change, like installed a bunch of plugins and stuff on the website, like on the WP admin side of things, things would start getting really broken for us downstream, and we'd probably override a bunch of changes. So it's really important to kind of like manage get everyone committed to like, hey, we are all working locally first and then deploying out. So
And then Jed had some follow-up questions about, let's say Dave adds two new plugins. When I pull, I'll get those plugins, but I won't get the fact that those plugins are turned on because there's no part of version control. There's no like WordPress.config file that controls all that stuff. That would be kind of interesting, actually. So maybe somebody should build one, something like that. What's that?
Oh, sorry. jQuery.com is doing really, I just saw a talk about this, doing really wild stuff with like database and content from Git. Like, I think it's either Git or GitHub as well. I'll have to find that term.
Their content they do weird stuff. Like their blog posts are like flat files somehow.
That gets like imported into WordPress though. Like it's wild. Yeah.
So it still uses like WordPress theming and stuff.
Yeah,
I wonder I wonder if it's one directional only. If they can use the WordPress editor to publish a post, and then that becomes a flat file. The interesting part about that is that then if somebody wants to like update the jQuery documentation, they can submit a pull request of that flat file, and it will still be updated and work in the theme. Pretty rad. Yeah, it almost seems like they should have probably just used a static site generator, but
What I will say to Jan is like, I think get comfortable doing this without WordPress first, maybe because WordPress is like, it is actually kind of tricky, like the database syncing and all that, and WP, what is it? Migrate DB.
Yeah,
Pro,
now that is awesome, is right? Helpful. So that would, if I were to, you know, if Dave were to add new plugins, I were to pull, get those two plugins, and then run WP DB Migrate Pro from live, I would, those plugins mm-hmm. would turn on for me. It does mm-hmm. do that. So that's the last part, is that DB syncing, and that plugin can help with it.
So yeah, like WordPress is kind of, it's actually kind of tricky just because of its nature of being an online, you know, super editor, install everything from the web kind of place. So, so that's, again, establish a regime that you change locally only, and then you're cooking with grease. All right. One more question. We got time.
Maybe I'll find one to read here. Let's just do a real quick one, huh?
An analog one?
Jermbo Lawman. I'm a front end developer mainly working in WordPress. Can you tell that we picked a bunch of WordPress questions because Joe was going to be on?
It's a deep dive. Oh, wait. Where's my Ooga soundtrack? There it is. Deep dive. All right.
I am sometimes required to build HTML templates for our clients to send out emails. I know how to email blast, but I'm getting increasingly frustrated by the lack of standards or lack of progress in this section. I know to build it like it was 1999, but that sucks. I believe form should be separate from style and yada yada, all the principles of CSS. My question is, why has the HTML email section of the web not been talked about in web standards? It's like we just are making huge progress in everything else except emails. I mean, it reminds me of having to write crappy code just to get IE6 to behave. Is this something that I should start evangelizing about or fixing, or has somebody already been like heading up this fight? What are some of the there's tools for cross-platform stuff? So this actually isn't about WordPress at all, it turns out. it's kind of like is the web standards movement ignoring email? Hot drama? Is that a thing that's happening, or are they not really related?
I mean, it seems like the biggest issue is like every email client processes HTML and CSS differently. I know like at the university we have, like we do our own, like I use MailChimp because they're fantastic and you know everything's going to work wherever. But, you know, we do our own like HTML emails at the university, and Outlook usually gives us problems, not to like dig in on Microsoft, but that's the one that sticks out in my mind. And like Gmail also has like weird things too. So I don't know if it's so much like developers are ignoring it, or if it's just, this is the way desktop or, you know, email clients are rendering
so
things.
It's not that web standards can't control what Gmail does. They can't control what Outlook does. They can say, this is how a box shadow should render. This is how floats should work. But they can't say, Gmail, if I float, you know, you should handle floats like this. They're a third party, you know. It's Gmail deciding that floats don't work.
Yeah. So I think it comes down to a lot of things. It's like some business sort of things. Like back in the day, like Outlook used to have to purchase a version of IE from IE to render in their, like they were treated like two different companies, even though it was one big Microsoft, right? So like Outlook would have to buy the latest IE, but maybe they were too cheap and didn't want to upgrade IE or something like that. So it got a little like messed up there. But then you look at things like Google, right? They're very invested in the web and everything, but like their support sucks in Gmail online,
right?
And that's inside a website. So what's going on? And I think
I tend to have a pragmatic thinking around that, though, in that, do we know why it sucks? Google clearly cares about the web. They clearly care about their product Gmail. They care about people getting good emails and stuff. There's something going on here. It's not like they're sitting on their hands saying, I don't care about floats. Let's just make them break. They mostly care about that email looks and works well in Gmail. If every email they got was screwed up, or there was some good percentage that would be a problem for them. There's some reasons behind why these things are kind of broken the way that they're broken. I don't know what those reasons are, but I know that they're there, you know? There's something mm-hmm. weird.
Yeah, and that's what makes me think it's like a security or some sort of weird issue.
Or
you know,
legacy like... email practices that would break if mm-hmm. they started being more compliant.
Yeah, I mean, like white links and blah, 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 all that weird stuff that people used to do. Absolute positioning a link over, you know, something else or
right.
something.
So they have to interfere. They can't allow the full world of HTML and CSS. I mean, clearly they can't allow JavaScript. We're all on board with that, right? You can't get an email and have it execute JavaScript. So we already know that there's some limited subset of things that can be allowed through email. And unfortunately, like kind of hacking through some of the features of CSS is part of the deal. There is something that – oh, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say Ken Nesbitt in the chat just posted a link to email-standards.org. And it's the email standards project, and it's got a lot of information about where most web or mail clients stand right now.
Cool.
So, it's worth checking out.
And it sounds like Jermbo was like, I want to fight this. There's some stuff in here about what can you do to further the fight.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can just squeaky wheel gets grease, man. That's what they say.
That's right? Very relevant here.
So yeah, call into your favorite podcast and write a question about it, and we'll complain. Rabble. It's good. I think it's a good thing. Oh yeah, Luke Hill, right? I think all the web clients like or the MailChimps and campaign monitors and stuff like that, they have pretty good documentation on what works and doesn't work and stuff like and what's total fail. And there's a campaignmonitor.com/CSS. Thanks, Luke Hill, for posting that.
Really nice.
But yeah, it's kind of like just so you know, like here's what's going on. So I'm a little bummed that responsive appears to only work in two. Mail clients, Apple Mail and
yeah,
iOS.
I was thinking that because that's really upsetting. Like, so, like, I guess you'd have to send out like a mobile. Like, I don't know how would you do that. I guess you'd have to just like
look at, just grab a MailChimp template and look at it because they provide those templates that they use in there and they do responsive emails. So just see how they do it.
Yeah,
I think tube of content. Be comfortable with that too.
Make my table just 320 pixels wide when I'm doing HTML emails raising them. I'm like, whatever. I'm just gonna make it the size of a phone, and then it will look good on a phone.
Nice.
I have not seen phone stats for email in a long time, but I think it's like 60-80% or something open on a phone. Is that
right? It's like way higher.
It's like because. Right. The first thing you do in the morning is like check your phone. So, So I would focus on the mobile side of things, but that's tough because your boss wants to see the desktop email that looks really cool, has a logo with some cats out to the side.
Looks great on like
wants to send a web page.
27-inch monitor. It looks amazing.
Looking good. So, I don't know. That's tough stuff. Let us know, Jermbo Lawman. I love your last name. If that works out for you, how you're dealing with it, put a comment in the comments field. All right, I guess, guys, I got some sad news. We are over time here, so Joe, we're gonna have to bid you farewell. But before you go, how do people follow you, get in touch with you, give you money, and then what's the one big thing that you want to plug? As your grand finale.
All right. Well, I'm out on Casabona.org, and I'm on Twitter at jcasabona. I'm like most social networks is jcasabona. And man, that's buy my book. That's how you can both give me money and the big thing I want to plug. So I'm pretty excited about, you know, the responsive movement. And my book is, I like my book a lot. I reference it a whole lot. So check it out.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Be sure to rate us up in your favorite podcatcher of choice. We really appreciate that. It goes a long way for us. And follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show. You can buy things from the store, but it may be disappearing. Spooky plans are afoot here at the Shop Talk Show. Christopher, do you have anything else you'd like to share?
ShopTalkShow.com.
Thanks, everyone, for listening, and I'm going to stop the broadcast now. Bom, 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 bom.